like the job of giving away $1 million checks to total strangers? Highly unlikely, but imagine how excited you'd be to wake up every morning and get to work. And even though your present sales job might not include giving away huge sums of money to unsuspecting recipients, there is a way that you can approach your customers and prospects with that same eagerness and excitement. You can approach them with what I call the million-dollar attitude. You know, since we began this series, I've been using that statement, sell it with the million-dollar attitude. Now you're going to find out what it really means and how you can use it. To get started, how about watching some TV with me? Let's tune into a program that was very popular back in the 1960s. It was called The Millionaire. And yes, TV did exist back then, although it was mostly in black and white. Chances are you weren't even born yet. But if you are old enough, you might remember the two stars of the show. If not, it doesn't matter. You'll get the picture really quick. There was the millionaire, John Beresford Tipton, who no one ever got to see. And he had a very unusual hobby, giving away checks for $1 million to total strangers. To do this, he hired an executive assistant named Michael Anthony. Mr. Anthony was actually kind of a salesperson for Mr. Tipton. He took his product, $1 million, and went out to call on prospects face-to-face. No phone call, no appointment, no pre-approach letter. He would simply knock on their front door or call at them at their place of business, and without telling them exactly why he was there, he would ask to come in. Once inside, he would qualify the prospect with a funnel presentation. Never once did he just hand over that million-dollar check. Oh, no. He asked questions, lots of questions. And only when he was positive that he had found the right prospect and that they qualified, did he let them have the money. While watching the show one evening, I noticed something significant about Mr. Anthony. Briefcase in hand and a check for $1 million in his suit pocket, he knocked on the prospect's door. An angry, belligerent man appeared and snapped, "What do you want?" And before Mr. Anthony could reply, the man added, "And I'm not interested in buying anything." What a grouch he was, and his mind was totally set against anyone that even looked like they might be selling something. Now, I don't know about you, but when I first got into sales, I felt pretty uncomfortable, self-conscious, and I don't mind telling you, even intimidated, when I would begin to make contact with a new prospect. That is, until that night that I was watching The Millionaire on television. And back then, I watched a lot of television, anything to keep from having to go out and be rejected by prospects. And while watching the show, I had an aha that entirely changed my attitude towards prospecting and making customer contacts. Ever since then, I've shared that aha with thousands of other salespeople, and it's helped them too. Because what I noticed that night was Mr. Anthony's face. He didn't react to that grouchy, belligerent prospect. He wasn't fazed by him. Not in the least. Mr. Anthony just stayed calm and smiled confidently. Then, as he asked to come in, he took a small step forward and removed his hat. It was winter. Wow, I thought. If I could only do that, not react defensively or take it personally when a prospect rejected me, how did he do it? How did he maintain such self-control? And then it hit me. Michael Anthony didn't react negatively because he knew exactly what would happen in just a few minutes. He knew this angry, defensive prospect would be soon thrilled that Mr. Anthony came to see him and that the gift of $1 million would be gratefully and joyously received. Now, of course, this was just a television show, but doesn't the principle make sense? When you can see in your mind, really see, the positive end result of your work, a thrilled customer, you won't be intimidated by any resistance or lack of interest up front. Focusing on the end result of what you're doing and realizing that your efforts will be appreciated once your prospect understands that you're there to help them, that really is the key. You know, I thought to myself, wow, I could do that. My product is very good, and once people invest in it and see the benefits, they're thrilled and they love it. How do you feel about your product? How much good does it do for your customers? How do you normally feel during the initial contact with a new prospect? Are you usually excited, enthusiastic, or are you at times a little apprehensive or intimidated, maybe even filled with dread? Well, we've all felt these uncomfortable emotions at times. But just focus on that picture of the end result instead of their initial resistance, objections, and excuses. Use Michael Anthony's million-dollar attitude. The results can be amazing. Salespeople have told me that selling with the million-dollar attitude carried them through many difficult direct contact calls, whether it was making a prospecting phone call, calling directly on a major corporation, or working with other salespeople on their sales calls. It really made a difference. So use it. Think about the end result of what you do, the good your product does for your prospects, and how your customers will feel about you and your company after they invest. On every call you make, think of yourself as Mr. Michael Anthony, bearing a million-dollar gift. When you do, you'll know what it means to have the million-dollar attitude. Why is it that so many salespeople shy away from making these direct contacts? I mean, do they feel it's unprofessional, demeaning, too hard, unproductive? Well, my experience with salespeople in almost every state in the United States, every province and territory of Canada, and even way down under in Australia, has shown me that all of these reasons exist, at least in the minds of many individual salespeople. What has your experience taught you? Is it better to set appointments or just appear in person? Only you can answer that question. Depending on whether your prospect is an existing customer, an account called on regularly, a referral, or someone who contacted you, if you can remain open to some creative and very basic concepts, you'll find this session to be extremely helpful. Just remember, though, when you hear an idea that sounds familiar to you, don't say, "Oh, I've heard that before." Instead, ask yourself those two questions we've talked about before. Am I using that idea now? And how can I improve on it? Make these ideas your own. Adapt them to your own needs and situation. So let's go. There are so many different ways to prospect and then make contact. Some of the more basic methods are direct cold contact, also known as cold calling. This method requires you to just go out and approach a suspect face-to-face, something that is usually very difficult for the ordinary salesperson. It often seems demeaning and can result in frequent rejection. You might hear a lot of no's when you're cold calling. Remember in an earlier message when I told you about my first 2 months of cold calling way back in 1967, over 1,200 calls and just one sale? Now, that's a lot of rejection. However, direct cold calling can still be productive because you see a lot of people each day. And if you're able to maintain that million-dollar attitude, you might end up with a lot of prospects and future appointments. And keep in mind, the goal is to get face-to-face with a prospect who's worth at least 5 points on your 10-to-win rating system. So after I began to understand the idea of the sell it with the million-dollar attitude instead of cold calling, I started to think of it as gold calling. What if you sell to accounts, though? Or if you have an assigned sales territory? In other words, known prospects or existing customers. You can still gold call. Just go to the office or the building next door or across the street and say, "Hi, I was just next door at Wonder King Enterprises. They've been customers of mine for 6 years, and I just noticed you've added on to your warehouse out back. Who could I talk to that's in charge of your new equipment purchases? Hey, give it a shot. You're right there anyway. I mean, what have you got to lose?" One of my clients that sells to hospitals has a specific person she calls on, yet on every sales call, she gold calls to one of the other many departments of the hospital by saying, "You know, I just came from Dr. Evelyn Woodbury's office in maternity. She's been a customer of ours for 5 years, and I was just wondering if you get any calls for our products in your department." And she says the response is almost always the same. The gold call prospect asks her, "Well, what products do you represent?" And then she says, oh, I'm sorry, I'm with," and off she goes into her sales presentation. So think next door and across the street, and you'll find some gold prospects as you gold call. But direct contact is just one method. I mean, there's telephone, direct mail, fax, and email advertising, as well as word of mouth, your website, centers of influence, past customers, trade shows and exhibits, or other methods. Now, of course, in a retail situation, the prospects come to the salesperson, and in account selling, your prospects are clearly defined. In pharmaceutical sales, the sales reps know who the physicians are in their territory and who the hospitals are that they need to call on. Distributor sales reps know who their dealers are and usually have a very close relationship with their buyers. Construction materials manufacturers who sell directly to contractors know who they are and where they are, as well as the specifiers for their products, like architects and engineers. But whatever your situation is, don't just rely on your company to generate prospects or on your existing territory accounts. In almost every sales situation, you have the opportunity to expand your prospect base, or at least expand it to centers of influence, who in turn could be excellent third-party endorsers for what you do. You can begin prospecting creatively for those 5-point prospects or better by getting referrals from your existing customers. What has your experience been with referrals? Do you give referrals to salespeople who have helped you invest in something? Do your customers give them to you? What has been the quality of those referrals? I mean, are they really much better than cold calls? In my experience with thousands of salespeople, the responses to these questions have been very negative. Most people say, you know, I wouldn't give the names of my business associates, friends, or family members to a salesperson. And I'm sure you've heard that before. You might even feel the same way yourself. Unfortunately, many salespeople say it's easier for them to just use other means of prospecting than to try and chase down referrals all over the place. And in far too many cases, that's true. In far too many cases, referrals are really no better than other leads unless you make them better. Let me tell you about one sales professional who has built her career on referrals. But it didn't start off that way. She first began her sales career in office copy machine sales. It was 100% cold call selling situation, visiting companies and asking to submit a proposal for the copy machines she sold. The law of averages said that if she saw a lot of people and just by luck timed her call when the prospect's copier broke down or was coming off lease, she could make a sale. Well, after almost 6 months, she finally did make a sale. Just one. Not long after that, she was moved into another of the same company's divisions, the audiovisual products division, selling state-of-the-art equipment to hotels, audiovisual houses, and large corporations. And like before, making lots of calls. Then some presentations, and pretty soon, about 1 out of 5 closing ratio. And that's pretty typical. After 2.5 years, she felt she had paid her dues in the business equipment sales field and left the company to pursue a new sales career, this time selling for a company called Classy Closets, a manufacturer and distributor of custom-designed closet units for homes and custom-designed office units for businesses. She likes to tell the story of how, even as a young girl, she used to love to organize her closets and the various shelves in them. Now she can get paid to do it for others on a straight commission basis, of course. Starting any new job is tough, but this job, she said, offered their sales representatives leads and actually preset appointments for the salespeople. Because of their advertising program and excellent word of mouth, they had lots of prospects. So prospecting was much easier than before, but she still had to sell the company, their product, the custom designs, and the price, which was usually at the high end compared to their many aggressive competitors. Yet she sold very well, and as the years went on, did a great job of what she called following up on the crew, the installation crews that would install the job after the manufacturing plant would cut and fit the pieces that she designed. Her return visits to her customers' closets, to their home offices, and to bigger businesses began paying off. Her sales were good, so good, in fact, that her client base grew and grew. It got to the point that now she had to tell the company president she was sorry. But she couldn't take any more leads. She was just so busy working her referrals. So now, she had enough names of highly qualified prospects to contact, and she kept selling more and more, making more and more service calls. She kept increasing the quantity and the quality of her prospects and the size of her orders. Some of the closets she was now designing were up in the range of $15,000. Let's stop the story here for a minute and see if this is how your sales career has gone. It's almost exactly the way my sales career went. It's how Jim and Debbie Hayes' career at Mastercraft Boat Company went. And it's how Martin Amazing Howie's went as an insurance agent. You start cold calling and make lots of calls and few sales. And then you learn the ropes. You still make lots of calls, but now you're making more sales, a higher closing percentage. But then, if you service what you sell, use TLC, think like a customer, promise a lot, deliver even more, and provide a top-quality product that thrills your customer. Suddenly, you find your career is based almost entirely on referrals with people calling you. More people than you can ever have time to see. Now, back to the Classy Closet sales pro. You might be thinking, hold on a minute here, $15,000 for a closet is a bit steep. Well, she says what a designer does is a lot more than just a few shelves and a closet pole. Think of your closet in your bedroom. I mean, you're in it every day, at least twice a day, maybe even more. And it's so personal to you. It's the clothes and shoes you wear. And the same is true for custom workstations she designs, like my office, where I have a work area surrounding me in a giant U. My custom designed desk is over 12 feet long, and the sides of the U are 8 feet long. That gives me about 28 feet of room to spread out all my stuff, and it's perfect to create my custom seminars. So your work area and closets can actually save you lots of time, if designed right. So in effect, what she's selling is an intangible: ease, convenience, increased productivity, being organized, as well as built-ins that are beautiful to look at. And when you're customizing what you sell to your prospects' tastes, needs, and functions, it's vital to make sure you do it right. So going back after the sale is critical to make sure that they are thrilled. How does your situation compare? If you're new in sales, then you still may be struggling with prospecting. And if you're a top 1% club member, you may still be struggling. But now it's to figure out how you're going to see all the prospects you now have. When I last visited with this classy closet sales pro, her niche market of custom home builders had expanded even further. Her sales were running $10,000 to $30,000 each for a closet system. Now that's not including any floors, wall surfacing, light fixtures, or anything structural, just shelving, drawers, and a totally customized, flexible system. Well, now you're probably thinking, okay, Weldon, did she sell you that U-shaped desk? Well, you've got me figured out right. I'm a customer. She did all of our closets at home, our entire office, the shipping room, storeroom. She's done designs for dozens of people that we've referred her to. Why? Because she sells a great product. She knows how to find the customer's need, and she uses TLC. And I'm just so crazy in love with her. She's my oldest daughter, Jill Pierce. And without too much prejudice, she's one top sales pro. So these principles have worked for me. They've worked for my daughter, Jill. And they've worked for thousands of other salespeople that I've shared this approach with. And it can work for you, too. It doesn't matter what your product or service is. This is an approach that can be adjusted to fit your situation. Let's say you've just made a sale. It could be a boat, a piece of land, an insurance policy, mutual funds, annuities, chemicals, pharmaceuticals, a portfolio of stocks, a piece of industrial equipment, a computer system, a new car, an office machine, an airplane, a tangible or an intangible. Whatever it is, you now have a customer, and it's time for service. Yes, service. Do you make service calls regularly after the sale is made? Most salespeople don't. That's why you should. Like Willie Cooley, find out what everybody else is doing and then don't do it. So what do most salespeople do? They spend so much of their time looking for new prospects that they forget about servicing the sales they've already made. Would you like to dig in a solid vein of pure gold? You can. In my opinion, the single greatest opportunity available to you as a sales professional is the opportunity that comes with customer service after the sale. That's right, servicing what you sell, making sure your customers are thrilled, keeping in touch, continuing to educate them and update them on new benefits of what they already own, doing the little things that make you unique as a salesperson. Let me give you a specific example. One hot August day, I went on a sales call in Chicago with two top 1% club members who work for the Superior Coffee Company, the leading coffee roaster and distributor for commercial use in the United States. Christy Lohmeyer, sales manager and director of business development, and her key account manager, Don Chernick, a 34-year veteran of the coffee war trenches. I had spoken at their national sales meeting the year before and was preparing to speak again at their next national sales meeting on the subject of customer service and why it pays to service what you sell. I happened to be in Chicago for another meeting, so I stayed an extra day and went out on some sales calls with Christy and Don. We called on a large company with 7,000 employees. Their food service operation was run by an outside food service management company. Now, here's a great example of how our benefit selling illustration, way back in message number 6, applies. The product, coffee. In this case, one of the features was consistency of flavor due to their stringent quality controls. Now, who would you relate that product feature to? The customer, right? Well, who's the customer? The corporation with 7,000 employees? Yes. What about the food service management company that actually orders the coffee and pays for it? Yes. And what about the employees of the company who receive free coffee and free meals in the company's numerous cafeterias? Yes. So in selling product benefits in this case, it would have to be a three-part benefit statement. Now, this also might apply to what you sell. Just before we arrived, Christy and Don told me their call objective. Top 1% club members know their objectives. Number one, they told me, was to check on the details for the scheduled installation later that week of 10 new coffee brewery units, which had already been sold. Number two objective was to check on the existing units that already had been installed and to make sure that they were thrilled. And the third objective was to check and see if there were any other opportunities for additional business. 4 hours after we walked in the door, the three of us left. What an amazing example of professionalism I had just witnessed. Because when you give additional after-the-sale service, you not only thrill your customers, but you often find new gold in the call. Coffee gold, in this case. You know, as they explained to me, a good commercial account might order 80 to 100 pounds of coffee a week. That's almost 5,000 pounds a year. This thrilled customer became worth 550 pounds of coffee a week. You know, that's over 28,000 pounds a year. Not only did Christy and Don know their product, know how to sell it, and know how to relate to people, they knew how to build long-term relationships with their customers. So it's not just getting a customer, it's keeping them by building the relationship. If you could look over my notes from that 4-hour service call that day, oh yes, service call, you would realize that no selling was done. Well, no selling on Christy and Don's part, just a lot of buying on their customers' part. That's right. They wanted more units, more coffee, and more ideas on how they could come up with coffee specials using exotic blends and cappuccinos, plus anything else Christy and Don could think of. Selling is helping. Selling is a win-win. And service after the sale paves the way for unlimited prospects and referrals. So again, it's keeping in touch, educating, updating them, and doing those little things that make you unique as a sales pro. When you do, your customers will see to it that you stay in business. And it can be just a little thing, like fertilizer, that helps plants and trees grow. A local landscape company did that for me recently. We were getting ready to refurbish our front landscaping. Yes, in that same house Don Raymond helped us invest in a long time ago. So I began looking around at some of the local landscape places for some large mesquite trees and other desert plants. That's when a friend that I happened to mention this to insisted that I go to his landscape supplier, Moon Valley Nursery. I'd never heard of Moon Valley Nursery, and it was quite a distance away. But one day I took the time to check them out, and I quickly saw why my friend was so thrilled about them. They not only had great products and very fair pricing, but they would plant everything for us and guarantee it. I was sold and I bought. By the way, do you sometimes coax your friends to shop at a particular store or go to a particular restaurant or a business? Sure you do, because you had such a good positive experience when you did business with them. And that's how Moon Valley Nursery got my business, for 6 big trees and about 50 smaller trees and bushes. Positive word of mouth. Now, the nursery man I dealt with wasn't what you would call a sales pro. I mean, he was a tree and plant guy who knew how to take care of trees and plants. And he didn't really sell. I just picked out what I wanted, and I had to close myself. Well, after he wrote up the order and set the date to plant everything, he just casually mentioned that each spring they would give me fertilizer free. All I had to do was bring in my sales receipt. Nice touch, I thought. Well, about a year later, in the spring, when I got ready to fertilize, that free offer popped back into my mind. So off I went to Moon Valley Nursery to get my free fertilizer, where they cheerfully gave me 2 20-pound bags of it. I mean, maybe it was worth $20. And you guessed it, while I was there, I picked up a few more plants and shrubs. As I drove back to Scottsdale, it hit me. How creative. A nursery figured out a simple way to get repeat business, just like Willie Cooley got the return ride, by providing the simple service of plant and tree fertilizer. They kept their customers coming back and saving that receipt with their phone number and the address on it. And oh yes, I too have referred them to many of my friends and neighbors, because all 60 or so of those trees and bushes from that initial planting survived and now have thrived. So what type of service after the sale can you offer your customers? And do you have a plan to generate referrals from that service call? There is a proven method of generating high point prospects, and there are 5 parts to this method. Now, not every part will fit your specific selling situation, but I think you'll find that at least some of the aspects of this method will. So let's look at part A. That's your service call. Part B is your referral presentation. C is applying your 10-to-win rating system. D, you make contact with the referral. And E, you report back and repeat. Now let me give you the specific details. First, part A, the service call. You should commit to making a service call at the time you complete your sales presentation. Your prospect, now a customer, okays the purchase agreement. You take care of all the paperwork and settle the details. The sale is closed, and the ordinary salesperson is about to leave. But instead, you say something like this. Now remember, listen for the principles that you can use, and then create your own specifics. Okay, you're the customer, and I say to you, congratulations on your investment today. You made an excellent decision. To ensure that you gain maximum benefit from your investment, I'll be coming back to see you on a service call. That's right. In 3 or 4 weeks, I'll be back to go over everything with you and make sure that it's just what you expected, and even show you a few extras I haven't told you about yet. Would it be better if I call you first, or is it just okay if I drop by when I'm in the area? Oh, well, you can just drop by. I'm usually here. Okay. You can expect to hear from me in about 3 weeks. Now, of course, your situation might dictate that you go back in less than 3 or 4 weeks, or you wait longer. Whatever time you suggest, make sure it's the ideal time to be of maximum service to them. In financial services, it could be when the prospect gets their first quarterly statement. In office equipment, it might be within 2 or 3 days. In insurance, when their policy arrives. With an air conditioning system, it's the day the installation is completed. Pick the time that will be best for your customer. Then next, say something like this. Mr. Creed, when I began this work over 10 years ago, I had to answer a very important question. How would I build my clientele and still service my customers? As you know, there are 2 basic ways to do this. One way is to spend about half my time servicing my present customers and making presentations, and then about half my time going out and prospecting, looking for new customers. Well, I chose another approach. For the past 10 years, Mr. Creed, I've devoted almost 100% of my time and energy to helping my customers reach their goals, working with them, and improving my professional ability to service them. As a result, my customers are very happy with my services, and our business has prospered. My customers have done the prospecting for me, not just because they like me, but because I've gotten them the results they want, and they want to share that with their friends and associates. Just supposing, Mr. Creed, I could do all the things you want and none of the things you don't want in our relationship, how would you feel about me? Oh, I'd be thrilled. Great. Thanks for the vote of confidence. I'm proud to say that most of my customers do feel that way. But right now, you don't know what I can do for you. It's all talk up to this point. But after you've seen tangible results, would you be willing to recommend me to other people you feel who could benefit from my services? Well, sure. Well, let's wait a while until I've proven what I can do for you. Now, Mr. Creed, what things do you expect me to do? Now, here you listen to what the prospect says and write it down. They might say something like, well, I want you to return my phone calls quickly, or give us service and repairs in 24 hours, or keep me informed about new technology. Whatever they tell you, just write it down. Then say, and what are some of the things you don't want me to do, Mr. Creed? Well, he might tell you something like this. I don't want you coming around only when you want to sell me something new. I don't want you to forget me. I don't want you to call me on the 3rd Wednesday of the month. That's my day for relaxation and meditation. I mean, whatever it is, write it down. These are your customers' requirements so that you can promise a lot and deliver even more. This is really creative. Think back to your role as a consumer. How many salespeople actually did this for you, told you they would come back on a service call? Estimate the total number of salespeople you've dealt with over the years. I mean, just on a personal and family level, not counting your business. Consider your home, your car and your car insurance, your furniture, appliances, boat, home entertainment equipment, custom design closets, vacation packages through a travel agent, computer products. I mean, hundreds of salespeople. But how many of them ever came back on a service call after the sale? Few, I'm sure. Very few. Why? Because they were out chasing down new prospects. They forgot about you. Now, that brief lead-in to what will later be your referral presentation should be customized to fit your situation. But remember, the key points were these: a commitment to return in a specific time frame, and once again, why are you coming back? To check on what you promised. Plus, and this is vital, to show them something new, something extra, like more jelly beans on the scale of value. This can help prevent buyer's remorse or a cancellation. And finally, you want to plant the thought of referrals in your prospect's mind so you can bring it up again after you've proven yourself. So what you've done here is really setting yourself up as someone special, unique, different, unlike those ordinary salespeople that they've dealt with in the past. No way do you want to just ask for a name. If a new customer does offer you a name as a referral, I'd suggest you do this. Hold up your hands, palms facing them, lean back and smile and say, "Thank you, but let's wait. I'm so glad you're excited about your investment that you want me to show it to the Dynamics Corporation. But let's wait until I come back for your service call and you've seen some tangible results." That's different, and it works, too. Sure, you'd write down Dynamics Corporation's name, but you wouldn't go see him yet, because you want to make sure that your present customer is thrilled with tangible results, not just thrilled with your sales presentation skills. So give it a shot. Test this approach out. See for yourself. Is this risky? Sure it is. Will you lose sales if you wait to contact them? Well, you might. But what I've found is that the quality of a thrilled customer who is using your product is so much better than just somebody who you sold the product to. But you decide. Now for the five steps. Step one is your service call. This could simply be your sales presentation all over again, except you demonstrate with the actual product since your customer has been using it for a while. If you sell an intangible or a service, you can still service it by checking over the paperwork, inspecting certificates, dates, and details, and showing that you care and are committed to helping them. How would you feel each morning if your selling day began with a service call? Would you benefit by positive reinforcement from a satisfied customer? Would your Michael Anthony million-dollar attitude grow stronger? Sure it would. So in your service call, review all the specific operations. Check the parts, the guarantee, the warranty, the condition. I mean, be fussy. Get your customer to participate and include anyone else who will be using the product. Educate them and thrill them. Now, of course, if you're selling a major business system, communications package, or any major electronic equipment, there'll probably be service people from your company involved and specialists whose job it is to train the customer. I mean, that's fine. What you want to do as a salesperson is be there to check that they are really thrilled. It's still your sale to service, even if a dozen others from your corporate support and service department are involved. After you've answered all their questions and done your job as a creative professional, should there be a problem, don't make any excuses or blame others. Admit your mistakes if you goofed, and then remedy the situation. Tell your customer that you'll be back again to be of further service. Commit yourself to 3 every 21 times 4. That's 3 service contacts, 1 in person, 1 by mail, and 1 by phone every 21 days, repeated 4 times, plus an anniversary card or a visit 1 year later. Now, don't tell your customers you're going to do this. Just do it. It's action, not words. Results, not promises. Promise a lot, then deliver even more. Let me share with you a personal story to reinforce this point. Many years ago, when I was a young sales rep selling educational materials and calling on school districts here in Arizona, I got a phone call one day from Mr. Sam Fees, the superintendent of schools for the Tempe School District. When I got the message, my first concern was that I had done something wrong. I mean, I had never met Mr. Fees, and it was most unusual in a large school district to even talk to the superintendent. So I called back and was told by his secretary to report to his office at 9 o'clock the next morning. Now I was really worried. Sounded like my days back in elementary school when I was being sent to the principal's office to be punished. At 8:45 a.m., I was sitting outside his office. "Hey, remember, if you're not early, you're late." And what happened next is riveted in my mind. At 9 o'clock sharp, his secretary ushered me in. As she did, this serious, intimidating man said, "Sit down, Joel. I need to talk to you." Forcing a smile, I said, "Mr. Fees, how may I help you?" "You can't," he said. "You've already done too much, Joel. My teachers and librarians have been telling me about what you've been doing in my schools. All year long, you've been coming in and giving service calls on your company's educational materials, some that you didn't even sell us. Why? I want to know why." "Well, Mr. Fees, when I took over as a sales rep for your district, I found that many of your key people weren't familiar with all the benefits of the materials the district had purchased for them. So I felt it was my job to provide this service and help them use what they already had and use it better." Smiling now, Mr. Fees says, "That's exactly what I thought, Joel. Do you know what this piece of paper is?" "Well, no, sir," I said. "Well, it's a purchase order for 100 additional sets of your educational materials. This is the largest single order we've ever given a salesperson. And do you know why you're getting it? It's because of all those service calls you've been making. And I'm confident you'll be doing even more of them with all these new materials we're getting. Joel, I wish I could convince other salespeople we deal with to provide this kind of service after the sale. It would ensure their future. Congratulations. And if you ever need a recommendation, please call me." Wow. I was on Cloud 10. I mean, that's one higher than the legendary Cloud 9. Not only was it a large sale for the school district, it was one of the largest sales for my company's Arizona branch. And the commission on it made it my biggest income year ever. From that moment on, service after the sale became my primary focus as a sales professional. Now, what about you, servicing your company's products, even if you didn't sell them? Like the old-time professional gold prospectors knew, there's gold in them there hills, and there's gold in service calls for you too. So make those service calls. Now, sure, in some cases, your sales presentation might have been made to a team of buyers, made up maybe of an engineer, a lawyer, an accountant, and the purchasing person. But the service call is made to the primary product user. That's your customer. Once you've made that important service call, you're ready for step two, your referral presentation. Begin by asking open questions. "Mrs. Brunetti, now that 30 days have gone by and you and your associates have had a chance to become familiar with this new system, how do you feel about it?" "Oh, we just love it." "Well, how do you feel about our company?" "Oh, very impressive. Your service people who installed the system were just excellent." "Well, Mrs. Brunetti, how do you feel about me?" "You're different. You came back, and we know we can really count on you." "Well, thank you for your continued confidence. But as you know, nothing is perfect. Is there anything else I should be aware of concerning your equipment, our company, or myself?" Now, do your best here to dig out some negatives. Ask, "Is there anything else?" three times. Then handle the negatives just like any of the objections that we covered earlier. And then say, "I'm glad to hear that overall you're very pleased with our quality and service. Unfortunately, this is not the case with all the companies in our industry. Some have really done a disservice to their customers. In fact, just the other day I heard of a situation." Now, relate a true situation, pointing out some of the problems other companies have caused their customers, without using any specific names, of course. This way you develop in your customer an awareness of the need to help others avoid such problems. And don't throw dirt. Remember the wisdom of the old farmer who said, whenever you throw dirt, you lose ground. And as we discussed earlier, you could also get sued. Let's stop here for a minute and think why customers are generally hesitant to give referrals to the ordinary salesperson. Could it be that customers don't like or trust the salespeople in the first place? Are they afraid they might get some negative feedback from the people they referred you to? And isn't it true that some people just don't want to get involved? In spite of these possible objections, you can still find lots of Class A golden referral prospects worth 6 or even 8 points. So let's go back to your referral presentation. So far, you've checked to see if the customer is satisfied, you've probed for any minor problems, and you've developed in the customer a need to help others avoid problems. Let's say the problem situation concerned a company that sold its products at a low price, but gave very poor service, in some cases no service at all. So you could say to your customer, "Mrs. Brunetti, my only job at Solution Systems is to explain our service and products to potential customers, just like I did with you 3 weeks ago. That way people will know what's on the market and will have a good basis of comparison before they make an investment. My philosophy is that selling is helping. Mrs. Brunetti, who do you know in the manufacturing business? Someone who would be interested in the advantages of the state-of-the-art products like this. Someone like you who expects quality service that you feel I should contact. This comes naturally after you've established the value of quality service, pointed out the need for such service, and offered more benefits. Now, what are you asking for here? A list? Just the names of anyone? No. Only the most interested person, not in your product, but in the benefit of your service and product. In listening to the referral presentation so far, did you get the feeling that you'd be asking for help for yourself, or are you asking for your customer to help their friends and business acquaintances? Right. You're asking your customers to help people they know and care about, not just help you make another sale. You've probably heard ordinary salespeople ask for referrals like this. Okay, Mr. Gallinson, now that I've sold you, I need your help. Would you give me the names of 10 people I could call on? I even heard this one the other day. Mrs. Einbinder, every time I make a sale, I deplete my reserve of prospects. So I have to rely on my customers for help. Who can you send me to? Hey, it isn't your customer's job to help you. That's your job. The tone of your professional referral presentation should be one of helpfulness to others. That's why it's vital to point out the need for quality service and the problems that can result without it. Okay, just before you finish that first part of your referral presentation, take out a 3x5 index card or a small pad and a pen. Look at the card, write the number one as you say these words, that you feel I should contact. And then keep your eyes on the paper. Wait, poised to write. Caution, don't say another word. Just wait and let your customer think. One of two things will happen. You may get a name. If so, you write it down. Let's say the name is Roberta Rogers at 21st Century. Immediately take out a second index card or flip the page and write number two on it and say, who else is like you and Roberta Rogers? And wait again. Keep doing this until you don't get any more names. Now, the other possibility is that you might get a no or an objection, something like, I'd love to help you, but I just can't think of anybody right now. And if I do, I'd sure be happy to give you a call. I've got your phone number and your email address. Hey, you're a professional. You know what that objection means. You just have to add more jelly beans to the scale. Pile on more need, use, and value. Reach your customer's will refer line. As in any other sales presentation, objections don't mean no. They mean I need to see more value. And you can add more value by relating stories about other referrals you've received and how much those people have benefited from your product. And before you close again, you might also want to focus the customer's mental TV camera. You see, most of your customers know so many people, it's hard for them to focus on specific individuals. So you can help them by asking about groups of people, like their former employers, or people in their professional associations and business clubs. Now, once you get a name, don't stop to qualify it. Just ask for another. When you feel you've gotten all the names you can, then go back and qualify using your 10-to-win rating system. Ask questions that will help you determine the point value for each referral. And remember, a referral isn't automatically a 6 or 7 pointer. The fact that a prospect was referred is worth 1 point. It's the other qualities that determine the total point value. So ask a lot of qualifying questions before you give the referral a point score. Experience has taught me that the quantity and quality of the referrals you get will be in direct proportion to two things: the quality of the service call you provided and your sincerity, your sincere desire to help. Okay, let's go back to Roberta Rogers at 21st Century and see how good a prospect she is. Now, the only way to be sure she's at least a 5-point prospect, or better, is to ask some good qualifying questions. So you'd ask Mrs. Brunetti, what type of business does Roberta have? What's her position in the company? How does the situation compare to yours? How open-minded would she be about new ideas like this? Well, you get the point. And you will get the prospect's point score, too, when you ask the right questions. Now, you might be thinking, Joel, why would a customer give you this type of personal and often confidential information? Well, the answer is only because they're thrilled with you and your service, and they trust you. Salespeople have reported back to me that with this type of service call referral presentation, their customers have even told them how to sell the referral. One seasoned sales pro told me about a situation in which her customer actually wrote out the features of the product that would most likely meet the needs of a friend who ran a similar business in a nearby town, and then discussed the best way to approach this person. Why? Because she felt a friend would benefit so much from the product. Now for your approach. After rating each prospect, that's step three, the next step would be for you to contact the best one first. This gives you an opportunity to evaluate your customer's judgment. So, making contact is step four. Here's how you do that. Be more prepared than your prospect. Have a better plan than your prospect. Follow a proven system. Keep accurate records so you know your percentages. Believe in yourself and the law of averages. Have a positive, expectant attitude. And be different from ordinary salespeople. Dare to be creative. Now, the method for making contact. Let's say you decide to call a prospect for an appointment. When you do, just be sure you avoid the 7 most common mistakes made by ordinary salespeople when using the telephone to set an appointment. First mistake, using the wrong tone of voice. Because the person on the other end of the line can't see you, the telephone causes them to focus their full attention on the tone of your voice. If your tone is too high or too low, gruff or belligerent, it may be more noticeable over the telephone. Unless the person on the other end already knows you, he or she may receive a distorted picture based on how you sound. But this is easy to avoid. Just record your voice and listen to it. Is that how you want to project yourself to your prospects? Let somebody else hear the recording. A friend or an associate may be able to detect weaknesses and point out some ways to improve. Above all, be relaxed, pleasant, and non-threatening. Mistake number two, speaking too fast or too slow. Besides directing attention to the tone of your voice, the telephone exaggerates your speed. If you speak too rapidly, it's hard for the listener to understand exactly what you're saying and can lead to mistrust. On the other hand, speaking too slowly can lead to impatience on the part of the listener. If your prospect can't see your facial expressions, he's basing his impression only on how you sound. And this, too, is easy to correct. The average person speaks about 150 words a minute. So find a 150-word article or speech, read it out loud, and time yourself. You should read it in exactly 1 minute. That would be average speed. Now, slow it down. When you're on the telephone, drop down about 15 or 20%, or about 125 words a minute. That should be the speed you use on the telephone. Now, right now, I'm speaking to you about 170 words a minute with gusts up to 225, which is faster than normal. But you're probably used to me by now, since this is our 11th message together on this program. And besides, if you did miss something, you can just replay it. And remember, the listener has to get a mental picture of you. So slow it down, but not too slow. Mistake number three, not getting through to the right person. Too often, salespeople are willing to settle with someone else other than the person they're really trying to reach, the one they've been referred to. For example, the person who answers your call might say, "Gee, I'm sorry, Mr. Krasner is out of town. Perhaps Mr. Lumpkins can help you." Although it's tempting to accept the substitute, your answer should be no. If Mr. Krasner is the one you want to contact, you're better off finding out when he'll be back than wasting your time with somebody who doesn't have the authority to make a decision. Get through to the right person, the person you were referred to. Mistake number four is the failure to check the prospect's availability to talk. You know, courtesy dictates that you clear the way before plowing in, especially if you hear background noise or if your prospect sounds busy or distracted. If she's in the middle of something urgent, it's better to call back than to interrupt her and destroy your prospecting opportunity. So check to see if it's okay to talk. Now, mistake number five is telling too much. Oh, yes, telling too much. Don't let your presentation leak out over the telephone. If you do, you're going to reduce your chances of a face-to-face meeting and force your prospect into making a decision on the telephone. So stop giving too much information. Do it in person, not over the telephone. Mistake number six, not offering your prospect a provocative reason for listening to you. When you call a referral, you usually face built-in resistance. I mean, they don't know you. They might not know your company. They don't know what you have to offer. They don't know that you've been referred to them. And they certainly can't judge you by your appearance. So you have to offer them a provocative reason for listening, a benefit. Don't merely ask for their time. It's too precious. Instead, offer them something in return. It's pretty difficult to turn down a benefit that hits home. Promise your prospect a lot, and then deliver even more. And finally, mistake number 7, calling for the wrong reason. If your purpose is to set an appointment, then just do that, nothing else. If you're prospecting and you call for anything else other than an appointment, you're calling for the wrong reason. Your primary objective is a firm appointment, period. Now you're on target. You've got your objective, the appointment. You have a strategy and a method. Next, it's time for you to outline your presentation. You should have an organized and powerful approach to help you get an appointment. The words you use, your tone, your speed, your attitude, and your expectancy will determine your success. And here again, you can use the 10 building blocks that we discussed earlier. But what if you're not contacting them first by phone? What if you're there in person, a face-to-face, nose-to-nose, toe-to-toe, direct contact prospecting call, either referral contact or a gold call? Does that seem more difficult, less comfortable? It shouldn't. With your million-dollar attitude, you can turn both cold calls and referral calls into gold calls. Knowing lots of effective sales techniques is worthless unless you put them to use. And even then, they will be of little value unless they're supported by your commitment to provide service. That's it. Service. It's your sincere desire to be of service that will enable you to benefit from these techniques. Not only is service the means of finding unlimited qualified prospects, it's also the best way to maintain the million-dollar attitude. Service calls help you see the end result of your work, so begin every day with a service call. Keep in touch with your customers. Call them on the telephone, drop in, and visit them. Prove you're still concerned about their investment after the sale. One creative salesperson I knew used to wear her service hat on every service call. It was actually a baseball cap with service printed on it. She got a big laugh from her customers, who happened to be school purchasing agents, superintendents, and principals. Then when she came into sales, she wore her sales hat, so they always knew exactly why she was there. If you're in account selling, where you see prospects and customers on a regular basis, you can use this hat idea. Or you can just print up some cards saying, service called today and sales called today. But don't pretend you're there to service if you're really there to sell. Your accounts are going to appreciate your honesty. Now, you might be thinking to yourself, is this guy Weldon kidding? Who does any of this stuff? Hardly anyone, which is why you should. The top 1% club members do. Can you imagine how you'd feel if 30 days after you drove off the car dealer's lot, the salesperson came to your home and inspected your car with you? What if he or she checked everything and then arranged for necessary service or repairs? Impossible. I mean, it wouldn't happen. How would you feel as a business person if the salesperson who sold you your office furniture came back and taught your employees how to adjust the swivel chairs, arrange the special filing cabinets, and the furniture, keeping it looking new? Impossible? It wouldn't happen. How would you feel about having your swimming pool salesperson come to your home 2 weeks after his company completed your pool? Well, what if he gave you a lesson on how to operate the equipment, clean the pool, use the chemicals, and exercise pool safety? Impossible. It wouldn't happen. You know, it can happen. There are a few professionals around, and they just keep getting the lion's share of the business. In 1976, Cy Richards leased me a car. He serviced it, inspected it, fixed it, and cared for it. He did everything he promised, and then some. And as a result, I ended up leasing additional cars from him, and over the years, I gave his name to many other business people. Don Myers from Walsh Brothers Furniture came out and showed me how to adjust my chair. And now what am I doing? I'm telling you about him. And Tex Carter from Master Pools came out to our home and serviced what he sold. He explained pool safety and how to use the equipment. 2 years later, when we moved into another home, the one Don Raymond helped us find, we called Tex to build the pool. He did the same thing. Tex was one of those professionals who kept doing the things that work, like providing service after the sale. Within 8 months, I gave him 4 referrals, and he sold 4 more swimming pools. Service pays. It's one of the best prospecting and selling methods there is. It builds satisfied customers and gives you the million-dollar attitude. So let's go over those 5 steps to generating unlimited, high-point, Class A referral prospects. Number one, making the service call. Number two, ask for qualified names during your referral presentation. Number three, rate the referrals that your customer gives you using the 10-to-win idea. Then the fourth step is how to contact the prospect by phone or in person. And now step five is to report back to your customer and repeat the entire process. After you've made contact with the referral, either call or drop your customer a note explaining what transpired. If a sale was made, let your customer know. If there was no interest, let him know that too. When you have positive news to report, just keep repeating the process. Hi, Mrs. Bernetti. This is Joel Weldon. I'm calling to give you some good news. Roberta Rogers at 21st Century went ahead yesterday and placed her order. She was very glad you sent me over to see her. By the way, who else in a situation like yours and hers should I contact? And ask for more referrals. A professional finds out what works and then keeps doing it. When I first began using this system of referral prospecting, I took step five, the reporting back the results step, to an even more creative level. Using the Roberta Rogers sale as the example, here's what you could do. Instead of calling or writing a note to your customer, Mrs. Bernetti, send her a small gift. It could be a book by a leading business author, or a book on golf, fishing, or skydiving, if that's a hobby of theirs. Preferably something not associated with you or your company. Send it with no note and no return address on it. And when you're pretty sure it's arrived, maybe wait another day or two just to make sure they've received it. Then call them and check how things are going with your product or service. Hi, Mrs. Bernetti. Any questions, any difficulty, or any books come your way that you didn't know who sent it? Well, yes. I did get this book. No, nothing. It has been driving me crazy, trying to figure out who sent it to me. Oh, that was from me. Just a little token of my thanks for the referral to Roberta Rogers. She ordered the deluxe system also and is thrilled about it. Oh, by the way, who else should I contact that might benefit from at least seeing what we have and how it might help them? And ask for more referrals. Do you think this creative prospecting idea can work for you? Well, how will you use it? When will you be making your next service call so you can pick up a few 6 or 7 point prospects? It works. It really works when you follow all the steps. Your customers will bring you new customers. They'll give you referrals and even set appointments for you. By now, you should be reaping the benefits of thrilled customers. If not, get started immediately with your service calls, and as you get ready to approach your next prospect, why not pretend you're Michael Anthony with a $1 million check in your pocket for your customer? That's exactly what Paul Schmelzly did. Paul was a salesman who worked for me many years ago. He was a great believer in the Michael Anthony $1 million attitude concept that I had taught him. It really gave him confidence in approaching new prospects by helping him see how grateful that prospect would be once the sale was made. Well, as we said in message one, these techniques don't always work. Usually they do, but not always. And so one day, Paul encountered a surly, cynical prospect who just wouldn't let him continue his presentation. I mean, this guy was not only unpleasant, he was mean and abusive. Paul knew that he could never win him over. And what was worse, this guy was getting to him. So being a big, strong, imposing man, Paul decided to attack. Oh, no, not physically, but Paul sure did make an impact on him when he said with a straight face, "Hey, buddy, stop right there. Have you ever seen the millionaire on TV, the guy Michael Anthony who works for him and gives out $1 million checks to people? Well, you are Mr. So-and-so, right?" And as he said that, Paul reached inside his coat pocket, pulled out an envelope. It was his paycheck. He opened the envelope just enough that the prospect could see that it was a check. And then he said, "Well, I'm Michael Anthony, and you can't have it." With that, Paul turned and left that miserable guy standing there with his mouth open as he hopped in his car and drove away. As Paul tells the story, the guy was running down the street after him yelling, "Mr. Anthony, Mr. Anthony, please come back." I never forgot that story. Paul said he laughed all day, and I laugh too whenever I think of it. So remember that story. And yes, you can make selling fun. And it is fun when you sell it with the $1 million attitude.